a state senator, but why run for governor?
My time in the state Senate has been revelatory. And what's happened is I've seen the lack of leadership across the street. And I thought, you know, we've had a dermatologist as a governor. We've had a lawyer as a governor. Why don't we have a businessman? And my career spans many, many different roles in the corporate realm, in corporate leadership roles. And so I've been trained and mentored by some very knowledgeable people about how to run large organizations. And I want to bring that expertise to Montgomery.
With your campaign, you have what you call an Alabama First campaign. A big part of that is reforming the tax code. How so?
Our tax code has been riddled by special interests for years and years. It's special tax carve-outs that have been granted to industries and people. And I'm not talking about incentives. I'm talking about just credits, exemptions, deductions. And they are embedded in our tax code, and there's no way to get it out of there. So I've done some things that are fairly innovative, like introduce the flat tax, which for the individual could virtually eliminate their need to file an Alabama state return.
And what is a flat tax? Explain that.
Well, it's to apply one simple rate to your income. You would take it from the adjusted gross income line of your federal tax return, multiply that times 2.6 or 3%, and send that check into the revenue department. Now, that would eliminate the cost of the average Alabamian pays $300 to file an Alabama state return. They wouldn't have to do that. Plus, I believe we would be able to reduce the size of the revenue department because it would be less auditing and less review.
With this flat tax, would you expect that to be revenue neutral? You just spread the base and lower the rates?
I think that we would keep it revenue neutral. That's my goal, because I'm not convinced we don't have the money we need in Montgomery. And then it brings up the second issue, and that's our earmarked budget, which is 93% earmarked. We go every year to decide how to spend 7% of Alabamians' money. Now, that's been that way since 1940, and we are unable to reprioritize. An earmark's like this. My wife and I, in our early marriage, we had children, and we budgeted something like $50 a week for diapers. Well, our children are grown and out of the house, but because of earmarks, we still have to put $50 toward diapers every week. That's an earmark. That's the same reason the sheriff up in Etowah County used the money from the prison system to go build a $750,000 house. Was it legal? Yeah. Was it right? No, it wasn't. That's earmarking, and that's the waste and fraud that happens when you have an earmark budget.
There is also a flip side to the earmark issue, and that's that many of these earmarks have been put in essentially because the public doesn't trust that elected leaders in Montgomery will spend the money the way they say they do. I'm thinking most recently about the state park system, where a few years ago there was money that was taken from the state park system. You had a constitutional amendment that passed that restricted how that money could be used. It seems like part of that comes from an issue of trust.
Well, perhaps it is. But no other state in the nation has an earmark budget like we have. Nobody, no think tank, Alabama Policy Institute, the Americans for Legislative Exchange Council, they're not looking at Alabama as a model state for how to run your budget. And the trust issue comes down to this, ladies and gentlemen, and Andrew, is that if you don't trust us to manage your money, then the only thing left is to raise taxes. And I've voted against every tax increase because I first want budget reform. We're transferring money out of the Road and Bridge Fund every year, it's like $62 million. And yet there are people that are saying you need to have more of a gas tax. I don't think that's transparent government.
When you look at the education system in Alabama, as you know, you look at standardized tests, other measures compared to other states, Alabama's oftentimes toward the bottom. You talk to business leaders and they say Alabama isn't producing the workforce that they need. What would you do about that, if anything?
When I've traveled throughout the state and I go to these various schools, I'm telling you, I see pockets of brilliance. I don't see horrible outcomes, but I know we have to have better metrics. So some of the programs that I want to do is I want to reinvigorate the reading initiative that used to be world-class. People would come to Alabama and look at it. I want to grow STEM because I think technology is the way of the future. And by the way, every student has an iPhone, and we're not delivering content through that method. But probably the thing I'm most excited about is let's quit assuming that every student is going to go to college and have a dual track where they can go to college or they can enter a career. And I don't want to call it technical or something like that. It's a career-based, like I did. When I came out of high school, I swung a hammer on construction sites. I worked on farm. I started a pool cleaning business. I was even a janitor. And then I decided I was going to go back to school. And I was going to get that college degree. And they can do that. So I want to bring the certification programs, whether it's cosmetology, bookkeeping, nursing, welding, or pipe fitting, into the schools. I want to use the junior college system to empower that. But we've got to do it with our local businesses in mind. Because we've got to produce a student that the market wants. And I don't think we're doing that right now.
One of the things that you talk about in your campaign material is banning sanctuary cities in Alabama. What do you consider a sanctuary city?
Well, it's a problem with many jurisdictions. They don't want to cooperate with ICE, and they don't want to report people they know that are illegal aliens in Alabama. Now, if they're legal, that's one other thing. But if they're illegal, they need to be reported. So I submitted a bill this past year that would increase the penalties to a Class C felony if anybody tries to harbor an illegal alien. That includes any state official that chooses not to execute our law. We're a state based on law. We're a law society, and you've got to carry out that law. And there's been evidence that that hadn't been happening. So sanctuary cities are not the answer for Alabama. It might be for California, where they're trying to make the state a sanctuary state, but Alabama's not going to have that. I'm going to keep California values and New York values out of Alabama.
We've said that you don't support the increase to the gas tax without some of these budget structural reforms, but you do see the need to improve infrastructure in Alabama. How would you approach that?
Sadly, when we talk about infrastructure or roads and bridges, we leave out broadband and waterway. I want to include that into discussion. I want to set up a commission that's going to set about a 10-year plan that's going to deal with the rural areas as well as the urban areas. But keep in mind the new technologies that are coming our way. We're going to have driverless cars. We're going to have fractional ownership of vehicles. We are faced with a very radically changed. And when I talk to strategist about the automotive industry, they tell me we're moving away from whether you're going to have a Chevy or Chrysler. It's going to be whether you're going to have a Google car, an Apple car, you know, something totally different. And so we have to keep in mind that the technology changes that are rapidly facing us when we think of roads and bridges. Look, I want infrastructure. We've got to have it. But I don't want to give Montgomery more money until they give me the budget reform that I'm asking for.
We may be moving to driverless cars. Presumably, those cars will still drive on roads. We'll still need to maintain, improve, build new roads as areas grow. How do you do that?
Well, one way you can do it is you can privatize the DOT, begin to outsource more. You can take the incredible amount of acreage that the state owns and is doing nothing with. If they don't have a strategic plan for that land or a building within 5 years, I say sell it, take the money, put it in a central fund, and let's leverage that for bonding for roads and bridges. But it's going to take a new way of doing this. P3, public-private partnerships, I've done those for companies. I worked for the company that built the tunnel that connected England and France. I've worked for the company that built the large road system out in Texas. In Texas, they have a road and bridge fund that's 10 times the size of Alabama, but they only have 50% more people than we do to execute it. There's a different way to execute our roads and bridges.
Well, if you look at healthcare in the state of Alabama, certainly healthcare indicators, be it obesity, be it infant mortality. We know Alabama doesn't usually do well with those sorts of rankings. You look at issues like rural access to healthcare, rural hospitals that are struggling. Do you see any role for the state in addressing those issues?
Well, we have to. The thing that I've wanted to see, And I think it's a step in the right direction is the Medicaid funding in the form of a block grant to the states. The states, from a theoretical and practical standpoint, are kitchens of innovation. We think, Senator Sessions once told me, it takes about 10 years for an idea born in the state to make it to the federal government. And so if we get the block grants and we start innovating on how it is we deliver medical care, I think we could show people how to do it right. But the rural areas are a real problem, and part of the problem is the government has chosen to get involved in the medical care. If they would let the market operate in a more normal fashion, I think you would have less of a problem. But that's a very complex subject you've raised.
Certainly, it's complex, and I realize that. But with that said, if the federal government says, Governor Hightower, here is your block grant, innovate, what would you do?
Well, one, I would certainly start work requirements for people that receive benefits. I mean, if you're healthy and able-bodied, you need to be working. You know, there's something worse than a low-paying job, and that's no job at all. Because a job gives you worth. It teaches you about life and responsibility. And so I want to try to provide that kind of environment where people can grow as I did as a young man.
Well, Senator Hightower, I appreciate your time. Anything else you'd like to add I didn't ask?
Well, I have a website, BillHightower.com, I'd like people to go to. And you've already mentioned the Alabama First program. And that has 12 ideas in it to carry the state forward. And I'm excited about it. I'm the only candidate that has a voting record. You can go and see how I voted on various bills. And I've been very innovative in my approach toward legislative issues. But what we need now is we need leadership. And I've had those leadership positions in corporations that are as large as the state of Alabama, have budgets that large. So I want to bring that business know-how to Montgomery to try to fix what's broken.